scorching the walls of her skull. She opened her mouth in silent pain and was surprised when smoke didn't come pouring out. Sanchia fell to her knees and vomited.
It's the lexicon spiking, she tried to tell herself. That's all it is. You're just sensitive to it.
Clef cried out joyously. Do you feel it waking up? I hadn't realized how beautiful they were.
She felt warmth running down her face and saw drops of blood on the floor below her.
I remember someone like that, said Clef. I remember him, Sanchia.
Images leaked into her mind. The dusty smell of the office faded, and she smelled desert hills, cool night breezes. Then she heard the hiss of sand and the sound of millions of wings. And she was gone.
Berenice peered through the spyglass, watching for Sanchia.
The girl had abruptly sunk to the ground and fallen out of view, which seemed odd. What is she doing? Why isn't she getting out of there? Then nausea hit her, a familiar sensation for her. They're spinning up the lexicon, she thought, activating more scrivings. And maybe it's done something to Sanchia. She watched for a moment, then glassed the big, open area beyond the office. She saw glints of metal, and realized guards in scribed armor were walking at a quick pace. Not on patrol, then. They were looking for something, and they seemed to be heading straight for Sanchia. Shit, she whispered. She looked back at the office. She still couldn't see Sanchia. Oh, shit.
Sanchia was no longer in the office, no longer in the foundry or the campo or even in Tavan. She was gone from that place. Now she stood atop creamy yellow sand dunes, the pale pink moon hanging fat and heavy in the sky. And standing on the dune across from her was a man, or something man-shaped, facing away from her. He was wrapped in black cloth, every inch of his body, his neck and face and feet. He wore a short black cloak that went down to about mid-thigh, and his arms and hands were lost in its folds. Next to the man-thing was a curious, ornate golden box about 3 feet high and 4 feet long. She knew this thing. She knew the box. She recognized them. I can't let him see me, she thought. She heard a sound coming from somewhere in the sky. The sound of so many wings, tiny and delicate, like a giant flock of butterflies. The man-thing's head twitched ever so slightly, like he'd heard something. The sound of flapping wings grew louder.
No, she thought. No, no.
Then the man-thing rose up, just a touch, floating a foot above the dunes, and hung there, suspended in the night air. Berenice stared through the spyglass as the guards got closer and closer. She had to do something, to warn Sanchia or wake her somehow, or at least distract the guards. She looked around. She had quite a few more rigs on her person, of course. When Berenice Grimaldi prepared, she did so with enthusiasm. But she'd never have imagined preparing for this. Then she spied a possibility. There was a massive globe light just outside the southwest corner of the foundry, standing on a tall, iron pole about 40 feet high. It probably lit up the main entrance when the foundry was running. She did some calculations. Then she pulled out her fusing wand and ran over to it.
I scrumming hope this works.
The man-thing hung in the air above the dunes across from Sanchia, silent and still. Then the sand started to swirl around him, undulating in smooth rings, as if being whipped about by a storm. But there was no wind, at least not that strong.
Please, no, thought Sanchia. Not him, anyone but him.
The man-thing slowly started to rotate to face her. The sound of flapping wings was deafening now,
as if the night sky were thick with invisible butterflies. Terror filled her, wordless and shrieking and mad.
No, no, I can't. I can't let him see me. I can't let him see me!
The thing raised a black hand, fingers extended to the sky. The air quaked, and the sky shuddered. Then there was a tremendous crack sound, and the vision faded. She was back in the office, on her knees. Her stomach was boiling with nausea, and there was vomit on the floor. But she was back in her own body.
What was that?
She thought, though she already suspected.
Clef, was that a memory? A memory of yours?
He didn't answer.
What the hell was that sound?
Said a voice beyond the office door. She froze, listening.
The damn lamp column fell over outside. It fell over the walls and into the yard.
Clef? She asked. Clef, are you there?
Yes, he said, though his voice was very small.
What's going on? Are there guards out there?
Yes, and they're coming straight for you. Sanchia stumbled forward and slipped through the door to the empty adjoining office. She climbed up onto the desk just as she heard a knock.
Miss?
Called a voice.
Miss, we need to come in and get something off the desk. Don't be alarmed, please.
Shit, muttered Sanchia. She leapt up, grabbed the window, and hauled herself through the top. Then she slipped out, gripped the edge of the building, and started to climb up to the fourth floor. She heard a voice cry.
What in hell? What happened here? Wake the girl up! Now! Now!
She crawled through the fourth floor window and started sprinting back toward the maintenance shaft. About halfway there, she heard the floor below erupt in shouting.
They've sent the alarm out, said Clef quietly. They're looking for you now.
Yeah, she said, leaping into the shaft. I gathered. Berenice exhaled with relief as she watched Sanchia clamber back through the fourth floor window. The half-melted base of the lamp tower was still glowing a cheerful red before her. She'd never intended to use the wand for this, and scrupulously made a note of this new application. Then she heard the shouts from over the walls, guards, probably, and soon they'd be coming out to see what had happened.
Shit, said Berenice.
She ran for the canal. Sanchia dropped down the lexicon shaft as fast as she could, leaping from rung to rung until she came to the ground floor. Then she staggered back down the passageways, heading to the rubbish room in the basement, where Berenice had so adeptly carved the hole in the wall. She could hear footsteps in the hallways behind her and above her, men shouting and doors flying open. She ran as fast as she could, but her head felt slow and sluggish. She tasted blood in her mouth and realized her nose was bleeding quite a lot.
I hope I don't goddamn bleed out before I make it out of here, she thought wearily. Not after all this work.
Then she heard a voice far behind her.
Stop! Stop you!
She looked over her shoulder and saw an armored guard standing far down at the end of the passageway behind her. She saw him lift his espringle and leapt behind a corner just as a scribed bolt shrieked down the hallway, cracking into the wall on the far end.
Scrumming terrible place to dodge shots, she thought.
But she had no choice. She flung herself back around the corner and sprinted for the door to the rubbish bin.
She's here! She's here!
Screamed the guard. She reached the metal door, threw it open, and leapt into the darkness, slamming the door behind her. She fumbled down the dark steps to the hole in the wall, half worried she'd fall off the walkway into the piles of scrap metal below. Then there was a harsh crack, 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 and the room filled with weak light. She looked back to see the door behind now had three large holes in it, undoubtedly put there by scribed bolts.
God, they'll tear through that in a second, she thought.
Come on, hissed a voice in the darkness.
Come on!
She turned and saw a light on the far wall. Berenice's scribed light, shining through the hole she'd made. Sanchia leapt down the steps and threw herself through the breach. "We won't run far," she gasped as she emerged. "They're right behind me. I'm aware of that." Berenice had her back to her, and she seemed to be fiddling with something in the roof of the tunnel. "There," she said, stepping back. Sanchia saw it was the anchor she'd used to open the grate of the pipe, but now it was attached to the end of a spike that looked like it had been stabbed up into the bricks. "Come on, now we really need to run." Sanchia staggered to her feet and limped down the tunnel. There was a faint crackling sound behind them. "No, faster," said Berenice, anxious. "Like much faster." She grabbed Sanchia, threw her arm over her shoulder, and hauled her forward just as the crackling grew to a rumble. Sanchia looked back to see the brick section of the tunnel suddenly collapse, sending a wall of dust flying at them. "Holy hell," she said. "I don't think it should bring down the metal parts of the pipe," said Berenice as they hobbled up to the grate. "But I would prefer not to find out, so up, up and out, now." Sanchia wiped blood from her face, grabbed the rungs, and started to climb. Chapter 20.
I thought I told you just to follow them, said Orso, aghast.
Well, we did that, croaked Sanchia.
She spat another mouthful of blood into a bucket.
You didn't say not to do all the other stuff.
To break into a foundry? He squawked. And to collapse its metallurgical outtake piping? I had thought such things would have easily been beyond the pale of common sense. Or am I mad, Berenice?
He glared at Berenice, who was sitting in the corner of his office, sorting through the note Sanchia had stolen. Gregor leaned over her shoulder, idly reviewing them with his hands clasped behind his back.
I was merely confirming a suspicion you had articulated, sir, she said.
And which one was that?
She looked up. That it was Tomas Ziani who's behind all this. That is why you spoke to Estelle at the meeting yesterday, correct, sir?
Gregor blinked and stood.
Estelle Ziani? Wait, the daughter of Tribuno Candiano? Orso talked to her?
You sure are telling a hell of a lot of tales out of school, Orso snarled at her.
Why did you suspect Ziani, Orso?
Asked Gregor. Orso scowled at Berenice, then tried to think of what to say.
When I was at the council meeting with everyone talking about the blackout, none of the house leaders seemed to act odd, except possibly Ziani. He looked at me, at my neck, and he went out of his way to dig at me on the Hierophants. There was something to that that just bothered me. Just a hunch.
A good hunch, said Sanchia. She blew her nose into a rag. I mean, I saw him, all of him. He's behind this, all of it. And he's trying to build dozens, if not hundreds, of his own Imperiates.
There was a silence as they all considered this.
Which means that if Tomas Ziani figures this process out, said Gregor quietly, he can essentially hold the civilized world hostage.
I still can't believe it's Ziani, said Orso. I asked Estelle if she would tell me if Ziani was coming after me, and she said she would.
You trusted the man's wife to betray him?
Asked Gregor.
Well, yes, but it sounds like Tomas Ziani is basically keeping her locked in the mountain, much like her father. So although she might have a reason to betray him, I don't know how much she could actually know.
I don't know who this Estelle person is, said Sanchia. But I just assume it's someone Orso is scrumming.
They all stared at her, scandalized.
Okay, said Sanchia. Someone you were scrumming, then?
Orso's face worked as he tried to figure out how offended he was.
I was acquainted with her once, when I worked for Tribuno Candiano.
You were scrumming your boss's daughter? Said Sanchia, impressed.
Wow, gutsy.
As entertaining as Orso's personal life is, said Gregor loudly, we should return to the issue at hand. How can we prevent Tomas Ziani from building up an arsenal of hierophantic weapons?
And how does he even plan to make them? Asked Berenice, paging through Tribuno's notes. It seems to be going wrong for him somehow.
Please, Sanchia, go over what Ziani said, said Orso, line by line.
She did so, describing every word of the conversation she'd heard.
So, said Orso when she was finished, he called it a shell and described some kind of failed exchange?
Yeah, said Sanchia. He also mentioned a ritual. I don't know why he called it a shell, though. Shells have something inside them, usually.
And he thought the shell itself was the problem, said Berenice. The Imperiats they'd made somehow weren't exactly like the original Imperiat.
Yeah, that seemed to be it. There was a pause. Then Berenice and Orso looked at each other in horror.
It's the Occidental alphabet, Berenice said. The Lingua Divina.
Yes, said Orso faintly.
He's missing a piece, a sigil or more. That's got to be it.
Yes.
Orso heaved a deep sigh.
That's why he's been stealing Occidental artifacts. That's why he stole my scrumming key. Of course. He wants to complete the alphabet, or at least get enough of it to make a functional Imperiat.
I'm lost, said Gregor. Alphabets?
We only have pieces of the Occidental alphabet of sigils, said Berenice. A handful here, a handful there. It's the biggest obstacle to Occidental research. It's like trying to solve a riddle in a foreign language where you only know the vowels.
I see, said Gregor. But if you steal enough samples, the bits and pieces and fragments that have the right sigils on them, then you can complete the alphabet, said Orso. You can finally speak the language to command your tools to have hierophantic capabilities, theoretically. Though it sounds like that greasy bastard Ziani is having a time of it.
But he is getting help, said Berenice. It is Tribuno Candiano who's writing the sigil strings to make rigs like the gravity plates and the listening device. Only he's doing it thoughtlessly, mindlessly in his madness.
But that still doesn't hang together for me, said Orso. The Tribuno I knew didn't bother with the usual gravity bullshit so many scrivers wasted their lives on. His interests were far grander.
He pulled a face, like remembering Tribuno's interests disturbed him.
I feel like it just can't be him.
The Tribuno you knew was sane,
said Gregor.
True, admitted Orso. Either way, it sounds like Ziani does have all of Tribuno's Occidental collection. That would be the trove that he'd moved out of the mountain, right?
Yeah, said Sanchia. He mentioned some other artifacts he'd hidden away somewhere, mostly to hide it from you, Orso. Orso smirked.
Well, at least we've got the scrummer rattled. I suspect he's been stealing Occidental artifacts from all kinds of people. He must have quite the hoard. And there was that last bit, the one I find most confusing. They had to dispose of a body?
Yeah, said Sanchia. He made it sound like they'd been disposing of bodies for some time. Didn't seem to matter whose bodies they were. I get the impression it had something to do with this ritual, but I don't understand any of that.
Gregor held up his hands.
We're getting off track. Alphabets, hierophants, bodies, yes, all that is troubling. But the core issue is that Tomas Ziani intends to manufacture devices that can annihilate scrying on a mass scale. They would be as bolts in a vast quiver to him and his forces. But his entire strategy rests upon one item, the original Imperiet. That's the key to all of his ambitions.
He looked around at them.
So, if he were to lose that...
Then that would be a massive setback, said Berenice.
Yes, said Gregor. Lose the original, and he'll have nothing to copy.
And if Sanchia is right, Tomas flat out said where he was keeping it,
said Orso thoughtfully. He turned in his chair to look out the window. Sanchia followed his gaze. There, huddled in the distant cityscape of Tavan, was a vast, arching dome, like a smooth black growth in the center of the city. The Mountain of the Candianos.
Ah, hell, she sighed.
It's insane, said Sanchia, pacing. The damned idea is insane.
Breaking into a foundry on a whim was pretty goddamn insane, said Orso. But you seemed game about that.
We caught them with their hose down, said Sanchia. In an abandoned foundry in the middle of nowhere. That's different from trying to break into the Scrumming Mountain. Maybe the most guarded place in the damned city, if not the world. I doubt if Berenice has some delightful trinket in her pockets that could help us get into there.
It is insane, said Gregor. But it is, regrettably, our only option. I doubt if Ziani can be lured out of the mountain with the original Imperiet, so we must go in.
You mean me, said Sanchia. I doubt if your dumbasses will be the ones being dropped in there.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, said Gregor. But I admit, I've no idea how to break into such a place. Orso, did you live there ever?
I did once, said Orso, when it was freshly built. That was a hell of a long time ago, it seems now.
You did? Asked Sanchia. Are the rumors true? Is it really haunted? She half expected Orso to burst out laughing at the notion, but he didn't. Instead, he leaned back in his chair and said,
You know, I'm not sure. It's difficult to describe. It's big, for one thing. The sheer size of the thing is a feat in and of itself. It's like a city in there. But that wasn't the oddest thing. The oddest thing about the mountain was that it remembered.
Remembered what? Asked Sanchia.
What you did, said Orso. What you'd done. Who you were. You'd walk into a bathing room at the same time every day and find a bath already drawn for you, piping hot. Or you'd walk down the hall to your lift at the usual time and find it waiting for you. The changes would be subtle and slow, just incremental adjustments, but slowly, slowly... People got used to the mountain knowing what they were doing inside of it, and adjusting for them. They got used to this place, predicting what they'd do.
It learned, said Gregor. A scribed structure learned, like it had a mind of its own?
That I don't know. It seemed to. Tribuno designed the thing in his later years when he'd gotten strange, and he never shared his methods with me. He'd grown hugely secretive by then.
How could it know where people were, sir? Asked Berenice. A guilty look came over Orso's face.
Okay, well, I did have something to do with that. You know the trick with my workshop door?
It's scribed to sense your blood. Wait, that's how the mountain keeps track of everyone inside? It senses every resident's blood?
Essentially, said Orso. Every new resident has to log a drop of blood with the mountain's core. Otherwise, it won't let them in to where they need to go. Your blood is your sachet, getting you in and out. Visitors are either restricted to visitor areas, or they have to carry around sachets of their own.
That's why the mountain is so secure, said Sanchia quietly. It knows who's supposed to be there.
How could it do all that?
Asked Gregor.
How could a device be so powerful?
Hell, I don't know. But I did once see a specification list for the mountain's core, and it included cradles for 6 full-capacity lexicons.
Berenice stared at him. 6 lexicons? For 1 building?
Why go to all that effort? Asked Gregor. Why do all this in secret and never capitalize on it, never share it?
Tribuno's ambitions were vast, said Orso. I don't think he wanted to mimic the Hierophants. He wanted to become one. He grew obsessed with a specific Occidental myth, probably the most famous one about the most famous Hierophant.
He sat back.
Besides his magic wand, what's the one thing everyone knows about Crisides the Great?
He kept an angel in a box, said Berenice.
Or a genie in a bottle, said Gregor.
He built his own god, said Sanchia.
They all amount to the same thing, don't they?
Said Orso.
A fabricated entity with unusual powers. An artificial entity with an artificial mind.
And so, Gregor said slowly, you think that when he made the mountain...
I think it was something of a test case, said Orso. An experiment. Could Tribuno Candiano make the ancestral home of the Candianos into an artificial entity? Could it act as a draft effort? Had an artificial god. It was a theory he'd mentioned to me before. Tribuno believed that the Hierophants had once been men, ordinary human beings. They'd just altered themselves in unusual ways.
He thought they were people,
said Gregor,
like us.
This idea was utter nonsense to most Tavanis. To say that the Hierophants were once men was akin to saying the sun used to be an orange grown on a tree.
Once, said Orso, long ago. But look around you. See how scrying has changed the world in a handful of decades. Now, imagine that scrying could also change a person. Imagine how they could change over time. His suspicion, I think, was that their elevation came from this artificial being they'd made. The men built a god, and the god helped them become Hierophants. He believed he could walk in their footsteps.
Creepy, said Sanchia. But none of this makes me any more eager to get in there, if we even can. Orso sucked his teeth.
It seems insurmountable, but there's... always a way. A complicated design means more rules, and more rules mean more loopholes. We have a much more immediate problem, though. How fast are you these days, Berenice?
How fast, sir? I average 34 strings a minute, she said.
With successful articulation?
Of course.
Full strings or partials?
Full, inclusive up to Tier 4 for all Dandolo language components.
Ah, said Gregor. What are we, talking about here?
If we're breaking into the mountain, even Berenice can't handle all that work. And besides, she's no canal man. We'd need more scrivers, or thieves, or scrivers who are thieves.
Orso sighed.
And we can't do it here. Not only will Gregor's mother notice us plotting treason right in her scrumming workshops, but this place isn't safe from the assassins. We'd need a full crew, and a new place to work. Without those, this whole thing is just a daydream.
Sanchia shook her head. I'm going to regret this. Orso, I need to know. How rich are you?
How rich? What, you want a number or something?
What I'm saying is, do you personally have access to large sums of cash you can quickly retrieve without raising eyebrows?
Oh, well, certainly.
Good. All right. She stood. Then get up. We're all taking a trip.
Where to?
Asked Gregor. Into the commons, said Sanchia. And we're going to need to tread lightly.
Because there are still thugs out there who want us dead?
Asked Berenice. There's that, said Sanchia. And we're going to bring a hell of a lot of money with us. Four lanterns, three blue, one red, hanging above a warehouse door. Sanchia scurried up, looked around, and knocked. A slot in the door opened, and a pair of eyes peeked out. They looked at her and sprang wide.
Oh, God, you, again? I just assumed you were dead.
You're not so lucky, said Sanchia. I've brought you a deal, girl.
What? You're not here to ask for a favor?
Said Claudia from the other side of the door.
Well, a deal and to ask for a favor.
Should have known,
said Claudia with a sigh. She opened the door. She was dressed in her usual leather apron and magnifying goggles.
After all, how could you have the resources to offer us a deal?
They're not my resources. She handed a leather satchel out to Claudia. Claudia looked at it mistrustfully, then took it and looked inside. She stared.
Paper Duvots?
Yeah.
This has to be 1,000 at least.
Yeah.
What's it for?
Asked Claudia. That bit there is to calm you down so you listen. I've got a job for you. A big one, and you need to hear me out.
What, are you playing at being Sark now?
Sark didn't ask for anything this big, said Sanchia. I need you and Geo to help on this job specifically, full-time, for a matter of days. And we also need a secure space to work in, and all kinds of scribing materials. If you can get me that, there's a hell of a lot more money where that came from.
That is a big ask.
Claudia turned the leather satchel over in her hands.
So that's the job bit?
That's the job bit.
What's the favor bit?
The favor bit, said Sanchia, looking her hard in the eye, is you forget everything you ever heard about Clef, ever, now, this instant. You've never heard of him. I'm just some thief who comes to you to get tools and credentials to get into the Campos, and nothing else. You do that, and you get your money.
Why?
Asked Claudia. Never mind why, said Sanchia. Just erase all of that from your brain. Get Geo to do the same, and you'll both be rich.
I'm not so sure I like this, San.
I'm going to make a signal now, said Sanchia. And they're going to walk up. When they do, don't start screaming.
Start screaming? Why would I?
She stopped as Sanchia raised a hand. And Berenice, Gregor, and Orso emerged from the shadows and joined her at the door. She stared in horror, mostly at Orso, who was cursing after having stepped in a puddle.
Holy, holy shit,
she whispered. Orso looked up at Claudia and the warehouse. He wrinkled his nose.
Dear God, he said. They work here?
You had better let us in, said Sanchia. Orso paced around the scrapper's workshop like a farmer buying chickens at a seedy market. He examined their scribing blocks, their sigil strings on the walls, their bubbling cauldrons full of lead or bronze, their air fans strapped to carriage wheels. Claudia had ushered all the other scrappers out before letting them in. But now she and Giovanni sat there, watching Orso dart around their quarters with terrified looks, like a panther had broken into their home as they slept. He walked over and looked at the sigil scrawled on a blackboard.
You're making a way to control carriages remotely, he said slowly.
It wasn't a question.
Oh,
said Giovanni.
Yes?
Orso nodded.
But it's not expressing right, is it, Berenice?
Berenice stood and joined him. The orientation's wrong.
Yes, said Orso.
Their calibration tools are far too complicated, she said.
Yes.
The rig probably gets confused, isn't sure which way it's facing. So it likely just shuts down after a couple dozen feet or so.
Yes.
Orso looked at Giovanni.
Doesn't it?
Gio looked at Claudia, who shrugged.
Yes, so far, more or less.
Orso nodded again.
But just because it doesn't work, that doesn't mean it's bad.
Claudia and Gio blinked and looked at each other. They slowly realized that Orso Ignacio, legendary Hippotas of Dandolo Chartered, had just given them a compliment.
It's something I've worked on for a long time, said Gio.
Yes, said Orso.
He looked around the room, taking it all in.
Worked on with crude tools, second-hand knowledge, fragments of designs. You've improvised fixes to problems no Campo scrivers ever had to deal with. You've had to reinvent fire every day.
He looked at Sanchia.
You were right.
Told you so, said Sanchia.
Right about what? Said Claudia.
She said you were good, said Orso. And you might be good enough for this. Maybe. What did she tell you about the job?
Claudia glanced at Sanchia, and Sanchia thought she could detect a hint of wrath there, which she couldn't blame her for.
She said you needed us, said Claudia, and a workshop of your own, and materials.
Good, said Orso. Let's try to keep things that simple.
They can't possibly stay that simple, said Claudia. You're disrupting everything we do here. We've got to know more to get on board with this.
Fine, said Orso. We're going to break into the mountain.
They stared at him, incredulous.
The mountain?
Giovanni looked at Sanchia.
San, are you mad?
Yes, said Orso. That's why we're here.
But why? Said Claudia.
Doesn't matter, said Orso. Just know that someone wants us dead, including, yes, me. The only way for us to stop them is to get into the mountain. Help us, and you get paid.
And what's the payment? Said Claudia.
Well, that depends,
said Orso.
Originally, I was going to pay you some huge sum of money, but having seen what you're doing here, some alternate options seem available. You're working with spotty second-hand knowledge, so perhaps some of the third and fourth tier sigil strings from Dandolo Chartered and Company Candiano would be more valuable to you.
Sanchia didn't understand what that meant, but both Claudia's and Giovanni's eyes shot wide. They froze, and both seemed to do some rapid calculations.
We'd want fifth tier, too, said Claudia.
Absolutely not, said Orso.
Half the Dandolo fourth tier fundamentals are intended to function with fifth tier strings,
said Giovanni. They'd be useless without them.
Orso burst out laughing.
Those combinations are all for massive designs. What are you trying to do, build a bridge across the Durazzo or a ladder to the moon?
Not all of them, said Giovanni, stung.
I'll give you some Candiano fifth-tier strings, said Orso, but none from Dandolo.
Any Candiano string from you is going to be outdated, said Claudia. You haven't worked there in a decade.
Possibly, but it's all you're going to get, said Orso. Select Candiano fifth-tier strings and the 50 most used third- and fourth-tier strings for both Dandolo and Candiano, plus whatever proprietary knowledge you gain during the planning process, plus a sum to be agreed upon later.
Claudia and Giovanni exchanged a glance. Deal, they said at the same time. Orso grinned. Sanchia found it a distinctly unpleasant sight.
Excellent. Now, where the hell are we going to be headquartered?
Most of the canals in Tavan were either full or close to it most of the time, but not all. Every fourth year in the Durazzo was a monsoon year, when the warm waters bred monstrous storms, and although Tavan lacked any central authority, water cared not a whit about which campo it flowed into. So, eventually, the merchant houses had decided they were obliged to do something about it. Their solution was the Gulf, a massive, stone-lined flood reservoir in the north of the city, which could store and dump floodwater into the lower canals as needed. The Gulf was empty most of the time, essentially a mile wide, artificial desert of gray, molded stone and dotted with drains. Sanchia knew it was prone to shanty towns and vagrants and stray dogs, but there were some parts of the Gulf that even they weren't desperate or stupid enough to inhabit. Yet, to her concern, Claudia and Giovanni were leading them to exactly one such spot.
"We've been to some rough places, kid," said Clef's voice suddenly in her ear, "but this is the roughest yet."
Sanchia was so surprised she almost leapt into the air. "Clef, holy shit, you haven't talked since that thing in the foundry."
"Yeah, I'm sorry about that, kid. I think I almost broke you."
"Yeah, what was that? What was the thing wrapped in black? Was that who made you, Clef?"
There was a silence.
"I think, maybe. Being close to that lexicon when it was spiking, I just remember that was what it felt like to be, well, to be around him."
"Who's him?"
"I don't know. It was just a flash. A picture of him atop the dunes and no more. That's all I have."
Her skin crawled. "They say the way it feels to be close to a lexicon, the headaches, the nausea, that's what it was like to draw near to a hierophant."
"Do they?"
said Clef quietly.
"After hearing what Orso said, maybe someone made me and then he changed himself so much he became that thing. I don't know."
She tried to keep the fear out of her face as she listened to this. "God."
"Yeah. It's not comforting to think of Tomasiani trying to follow in such a thing's footsteps."
"There it is," said Giovanni, trotting along the west side of the slanted stone walls. He pointed ahead, and though it was now night, they could see he was pointing to a large, dripping tunnel, blocked off with thick, crisscrossing iron bars.
"That is a storm drain," said Gregor.
"True," said Gio. "What marvelous eyes you have, Captain."
"Correct me if I'm wrong," said Gregor. "But the problem with working out of a storm drain is that when there is a storm, it tends to fill with water, which I, personally, cannot breathe."
"Did I say we were going to be working in a storm drain?" said Gio.
He led them down a molded stone path to the storm drain
and took out a small, thin, scribed strip of iron. He examined the bars, tapped the strip to one section, and then gave the bars a tug. The bottom quarter of the bars swung open, like the gate of a garden fence.
"Clever," said Orso, peering at the hinges. "It's a weak door and a weak lock, but you don't need it to be strong if no one knows it's there."
"Exactly."
Geo bowed and extended an arm.
"After you, good sir. Mind the sewage."
They entered the massive drain.
"I have to admit, I'm getting pretty goddamn tired of pipes," said Sanchia.
"Seconded," said Berenice.
"We won't be here for long," said Claudia.
She and Giovanni produced a handful of scribed lights, slashing rosy hues across the rippled walls. They walked down the tunnel about 300 feet or so. Then the two scrappers started peering around them.
"Oh, goodness," said Claudia. "I haven't been here in ages. Where is it?"
Giovanni slapped his forehead.
"Damn, I'm being stupid. I forgot. Just a second."
He pulled out a small, scribed bead of metal and seemed to twist it, like it was two rotating halves. Then he held it up and let go. The bead zipped over to one wall like it had been ripped along by a string.
"There," said Geo.
"That's right," said Claudia. "I forgot you'd installed a flag."
She walked over to the bead, which was now stuck to the wall, and held up a light. Right below the bead was a tiny slot that was practically invisible if you didn't know to look for it. Geo took back out the scribed iron strip he'd used on the drainage bars and stuck it into the slot. There was the sound of stone groaning on stone. Geo shoved at the wall with his shoulder, and suddenly a large segment pivoted inward, swinging like a large, circular stone door.
"Here we are."
Sanchia and the rest all peered into the rounded door. Inside was a long, tall, narrow passageway with ornately wrought walls that were lined with what appeared to be some kind of cubbyholes, most of which were empty, but not all. In some of the cubbyholes, Sanchia spied urns and
skulls, she said aloud.
A
crypt?
Precisely, said Giovanni.
What in the hell is a crypt doing in the gulf? Asked Orso.
Apparently there had been quite a few minor estates here before the merchant houses made the gulf, said Claudia, walking inside. The houses just tore them down and paved over them. No one thought much about what was underneath until they started digging the tunnels. Most of the crypts and basements have gotten flooded out, but this one is in fairly good condition.
Sanchia followed her in. The crypt was large, with a big, round central chamber and several smaller, narrow wings splitting off from it.
How'd you find it?
Someone once traded us jewelry for rigs, said Claudia. The jewelry was old and branded with a family crest, and one of us realized it had had to come from a family grave. We went looking and found this.
We hole up here only when we've really pissed off a merchant house, said Geo. And it sounds like you lot have done exactly that. So, this should work nicely.
So, said Berenice, staring around, we're going to be scribing and working and for a while living in a crypt with bones.
Well, if you're really going to try to break into the mountain, then you're probably going to wind up dead anyway,
said Geo.
Maybe this will help you get used to it.
Orso had found a hole in the vaulted ceiling.
Does this go up to the surface?
Yeah, said Claudia, to let heat out if you're doing any minor forging or smelting.
Excellent. Then this should work quite well, said Orso.
Gregor was leaning over a large stone sarcophagus with a caved-in lid. He peered through the gap at the remains below.
Will it?
He he said flatly.
Yes, said Orso.
He rubbed his hands.
Let's get to work. I hate this place, said Clef.
Why? It doesn't seem to have anyone in it trying to stab me, which makes me like it.
Because it makes me remember the dark, said Clef. Where I was for so long.
This isn't the same.
Sure it is, said Clef. This place is old and full of trapped ghosts, kid. Trust me, I used to be one. Maybe I still am.
Once they'd gotten the lay of things, Orso waited out in the tunnel, staring out at the shanty towns beyond. Greasy campfires and thick black smoke crawled across the surface of the gulf. The smoke turned the starlit sky into a dull smear. Berenice emerged from the crypt and joined him.
I'll make the requisitions now, sir, she said. We should be able to move in and get everything ready to start work tomorrow night.
Orso said nothing. He just stared out at the gulf and the commons beyond.
Is something the matter, sir? She asked.
I didn't think it would be like this, you know, he said. 20-30 years ago, when I first started working for Tribuno, we all genuinely thought we were going to make the world a better place. End poverty. End slavery. We thought we could rise above all the ugly human things that held the world back and, well, here I am, standing in a sewer, paying a bunch of rogues and renegades to break into the place where I used to live.
Might I ask, sir, said Berenice, if you could change anything, what would it be?
Hell, I don't know. I suppose if I thought I had a chance, I'd start my own merchant house.
Really, sir? She said.
Sure. It's not like there's any law forbidding it. You just have to file papers with the Tavani Council. But no one bothers anymore. Everyone knows the four prime houses would crush you instantly if you tried. There used to be dozens when I was young. And now... only four, and four forever, it seems.
He sighed.
I'll be back tomorrow evening, Berenice. If I'm still alive, that is. Good night.
She watched as he strolled down the tunnel and slipped out the iron grate. Her words echoed faintly after him.
Good night, sir.
This is nuts, whispered Claudia in the dark. It's insane! It's madness, Sanchia!
It's lucrative, said Sanchia. And keep your voice down.
Claudia peered down the warrens of the crypt and confirmed they were alone.
You've got him on you now, don't you? She asked. Don't you?
I told you to forget about him, said Sanchia. Claudia miserably rubbed her face.
Even if you didn't have Clef, this is beyond foolish. How can you trust these people?
I don't, said Sanchia. Not Orso, at least. Berenice is, well, normal, but she reports to Orso. And Gregor, well, Gregor seems... She struggled for the right word. She was unused to complimenting men of the law. Decent.
Decent? Decent? Don't you know who he is? And I don't mean him being Ophelia's son.
Then what?
Claudia sighed.
There was a fortress city in the Daulo States called Dantua. 5 years ago, a Dandolo House mercenary army captured it. A big victory for the entire region. But something went wrong, and their scribed devices failed. They were helpless, trapped in the fortress. A siege followed, with the Dandolos inside. Things went from bad to worse. Starvation and plague and fire. When the Morsini sailed in to rescue them all, they found only one survivor. Just one. Gregor Dandolo.
Sanchia stared at her as she listened to this. I don't believe you.
It's true. I swear to God, it's true.
How? How did he survive?
No one knows, but he did. The Revenant of Dantua, they call him. That's your decent man for you. You've gone and surrounded yourself with lunatics, Sanchia. I hope you know what you're doing. Especially because you've got us mixed in with them, too.
Chapter 21. The next night, they stared at a map of the Candiano Campo and brainstormed.
You all only need to worry about getting Sanchia to and from the mountain, said Orso. I've got my own ideas about maneuvering through the thing itself.
There are always three ways, Claudia said. You can go under, over, or through.
Over's not an option, said Giovanni. She can't fly to the mountain. To do that, she'd have to plant an anchor or a construction scribing that would pull her to it. And you'd have to get in to plant one.
And through is out, said Gregor.
He walked up to the map of the Candiano Campo and traced the main road running up to the huge dome.
There are 11 gates from the outer wall to the mountain. The last two will be under constant watch, and you need all kinds of papers and scribed credentials to get through.
Everyone stared at the map in silence.
What's that? Asked Sanchia.
She pointed to a long, winding blue streak that led from the shipping channel to the mountain.
That's the delivery canal, said Orso. It's used by barges full of wine and, hell, whatever else they need in the mountain. It's got the exact same problem as the roads, though. The last two gates are intensely guarded. Every delivery is stopped and thoroughly searched before it's allowed to proceed.
Sanchia thought about it. Could I cling to the side of a barge, just below the waterline, and you all could give me some way to breathe air?
They all looked surprised by that idea.
The canal gates check sachets just like the rest of the walls, said Orso slowly. But I believe they only pass things that go through them. Under them, that might be a different story.
I bet the underside of the barge would trigger the check too, said Claudia. But if Sanchia was walking along the bottom of the canal...
Whoa, said Sanchia. I didn't say that.
How deep are the canals?
Asked Gregor.
40-50 feet,
said Gio.
The walls definitely wouldn't check that far down.
I never suggested anything like this, said Sanchia, now alarmed.
We can't scribe a way for a human to breathe air, said Orso. That's impossible.
Sanchia sighed with relief, since it sounded like they were abandoning this train of thought.
But,
he glanced around, and laid one hand on a sarcophagus.
There are other options.
Claudia frowned at the sarcophagus for a moment, then her mouth dropped open.
A vessel? A casket?
Yes, said Orso. One that's waterproof and small, but capable of holding a person. We plant a weak anchor on one of the barges, and it drags the casket along the bottom of the canal behind it. Simple.
With me in it? Asked Sanchia weakly. You're saying I'm in this casket? Being dragged along under the water? Orso waved a hand at her.
Oh, we can make it safe. Probably.
Certainly safer than sneaking around the guards or whatever, said Claudia. The barge would secret you up the entire length of the canal, and you wouldn't risk catching a boat in the face this way.
No, said Sanchia. I just risk hitting a rock too hard and drowning.
I told you we can make it safe,
insisted Orso. Probably. Oh, my God, said Sanchia. She buried her face in her hands.
Is there...